The Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129 presents America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Good afternoon. This is Tim Reedy from America Media sitting in for Father Matt Malone. And this week you're listening to our smart Catholic take on faith and culture.
And I'm Father Eric Sundrup. I'm filling in for Kerry Weber. And as we talked about, we're going to be looking at articles that are analysis of the intersection of the church and the world gathered here by the team at America Magazine. We're also joined by Vivian Cabrera, who works at America Magazine. We're glad to have you with us today, Vivian.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, thanks, Vivian. Not your first show. You've been on a couple times now.
She's an old pro.
We'll see how it goes.
Right now, we're going to bring in our friend, Brother Joe Hoover, who's been sitting here patiently. So, Brother Hoover, his article, we had this discussion earlier, what should we call you? We have an article here, No, There Is Not a Civil War in the Catholic Church. Joe, maybe you can just start. What inspired you to write this? Who were you writing it for? Was it for us or?
Specifically for your coworkers?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's really great to be here. I just do see a lot about the divisions in the church that people talk about constantly, whether it's in Catholic media, Catholic commentators, panels, groups, discussions in evening seminars, that kind of thing. And I just don't buy it. I don't believe that that touches into the reality of where people actually live in their real day-to-day lives as Catholics. The article is about church issues, not so much about political issues, that there's division between Catholic Republicans and Catholic Democrats. It's about the neuralgic church issues, as they say, that it seems to be, if you're in the Catholic media echo chamber, like it's called, that we're all talking about, but most people aren't. I just don't think they are. And as a Jesuit, I've had a great experience and a great chance to kind of all of us, Father Eric and all the Jesuits who work at America and elsewhere, have been all over through experiments and working and teaching and giving retreats and giving talks and going on pilgrimages or doing summer immersions, and have been able to be with people where they live and how their lives actually are. So that's a great gift as a Jesuit. And I just don't see people engaged in all of these sort of neuralgic Catholic issues around Vatican II or women priests or homosexuality or gay marriage or birth control or conservative or liberal approaches to liturgy, things like that. Not that those aren't real and people have opinions, but it's not where they live. People don't live on those issues.
Yeah, you mentioned like you've ministered in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, in Berkeley, St. Paul, Chicago, New Mexico. You're from Nebraska, New Orleans. So you're definitely not just talking about coastal Catholicism here. You're talking about the whole United States. And what you're seeing is that people, what they're really passionate about are their families and their kids and the Eucharist. I mean, that it's really the essentials of the faith.
Yeah, I mean, people, they keep showing up because of the Eucharist in some ways, and because of community in their schools, their kids are going to the schools. In my experience, a lot of people from all stripes are in love with the Pope in a kind of his straightforward way. And that sense of really being with people where they're at and calling them to something better and reminding us of mercy and love and the fundamentals. I've been to more places than is even in this article. And kind of just not always to give talks and kind of be with the leaders, but kind of just in the pews with people where they're at,
I was thinking about this article this past week, and I was home for a college reunion. So I was hanging out with some friends, and they asked me a question, and I remember getting like super fired up about it and start getting passionate and discussing it. And a good friend of mine turns to me and goes, I love how you get passionate about things that I have absolutely no concern about or I'm not keeping track of. And it was one of those moments of, wow, this is exactly what this article was talking about. I was like, what? You don't spend your whole day worried about this particular issue? And my friend was like, no, I don't have time.
Yeah, when I first read this article, I was at one reaction I had was like, oh, this is refreshing. Like, people don't the essentials of the faith are what are most important to them, and that's a good reminder for all of us who get sucked into talking about these issues and maybe forget about some of that stuff sometimes. My other reaction was like, I was slightly depressed, like, oh, these are really important subjects that people should be passionate about. Like, shouldn't we all care about the quality of our liturgies or Vatican councils. These are things that, like, as Catholics, what I find rich and satisfying about the faith is that there's a great intellectual tradition. There's so much that I learn about the church every day, and I work for a church organization. I want others to share in that too. So I had this kind of mixed reaction, but I think, Joe, that's probably what you were going for, is to provoke people a little bit.
Well, I'm kind of just interested in saying what seems real to me, yeah. which I think is helpful, maybe even just for my own sake, to put it out there that, like, there comes a point in when you're thinking about an article or something that's just, you just got to say it, whatever people think. I made the arguments as best as I could. And I think, there's probably a lot of people who've already left the church, and maybe there's a self-selecting aspect to this. People who care a lot about issues that are neuralgic, that would have a lot of problems with the church, maybe have already left, to some degree. So there's a common core of people who are there for, what the church is at its fundamental core.
Like what Tim said, it is a great reminder for all of us who are kind of in this echo chamber. When we go to Mass and we encounter just normal everyday Catholics, that they're not always talking about this, and we should step back and take a look at it. You have a great little quote here about how Catholics do not focus on, like, quarrels, like a dubia. Does anyone really know what a dubia is? Which I was like, this is great. No one I talk to outside of this circle knows what that is. They care more about, is the choir good? A friend who sings, and she just gets really upset when the choir we're at is not the best, right? So then they're just, that's what they're focused on, and that's what they're trying to make sure they can get their kids, like, to school on time, like you mentioned. So this was a really good reminder just to take a step back and live out our Catholic faith in the daily kind of interactions and in the going to Mass and just living what it means to be Catholic, and not to focus 100% all the time on this, like, tension that we find
on Twitter.
Exactly. Right, like, step back from that and just go and, like, live what it means to be Catholic, right?
Twitter, a video game for journalists.
That's perfect.
Well, you are our social, you help mm-hmm. monitor and run our Twitter yeah. feed, so you probably see this more closely than the rest of us. Mm-hmm. What was the reaction to Joe's article when it came out?
I mean, the timing was perfect, because he mentioned the New York Times published, I think, the day before, the Catholic Church is in a civil war, and I think immediately we're like, no.
We published this, yes.
No, it's not. And I think just for normal Catholics who read our publication, this resonated deeply with them. But for our fellow journalists who are also kind of reading us and following, it was a little more difficult to remind them to, like, not step out of their kind of little world and realize that this is the reality of most people and their experience of what church is.
I wonder, Joe, like, do you consciously, like, I think as a journalist, we kind of have to keep mm-hmm. an eye on social media and Twitter, and just to see what the conversations are going on. But I wonder if in some way that can hinder your own pastoral work sometimes, and that, like, if you're all, like, for example, do you spend a lot of time on Twitter, and do you see some dangers in engaging too much on social media and not engaging with, the people that you've ministered to more directly?
No, that's a great question. I mean, to some degree, I'm not, all over social media. I don't have a Twitter account, very little social media engagement. So I fully admit that there's a piece to this that I'm not engaged with. But, it's, in some ways, it's the professional's job, for lack of a better word, to know what's going on there and to help to feed people what is important and what's going on that they might not be thinking about. This encyclical, that issue in the church that does impact their lives that they might not realize. Why did Vatican II do this or that? There was a priest at Creighton who went to give a talk about Pope Francis's encyclicals and some of his teachings to a number of priests in Kansas. And this is nothing to say to criticize those priests, but he asked them, have you read his encyclicals? Have you read them? Have you talked about them with your parishes? Have you talked about his teachings with your parishes? And they all said no. So there's a degree where people could be more informed about the things that really could enliven their faith, but it's maybe not happening to some degree.
Right. Yeah, I wonder, like, Eric, you wear these two hats too. Like, you're a professional journalist, professional Catholic, for the lack of a better term, at America. But you also work in ministry in settings where people are not as engaged or as obsessive about these issues.
Yeah.
How do you go between those two tracks? Because sometimes I find it difficult. Like, I can talk the language of the professional Catholic, but when I'm asked to talk the language of, faith sharing that's more challenging to me, because that's not where I live every day.
Yeah, I think there's a gear shift, and sometimes you hit the clutch and you do it well, and then sometimes you do it and the whole car lurches. I have found myself giving a homily about something I thought was like the pressing matter of the week, and like looking out in the congregation and seeing like people look at me like I am talking like I've come from another planet. No, and then I'm like, I have misread something, and so I've adjusted on the fly. So I think it's an awareness and an ability to listen to people's experience, and I think that's what I love this. I was teasing Joe before we got here. I wanted to introduce him as like the Jesuit that I most often like to disagree with, because he's usually got something right that I don't want to admit at the time, and I become a better person for having argued with him about it, whether I do that in person or just read his article obsessively and make notes on it. But I found that stuff like this calls me into more attentive listening to what's going on in people's lives. And some people are going to ask those questions, and I field some of those questions. Vivian will get a hold of me when something comes in on mm-hmm. social media that she's like, well, how would you answer this? But I also do pastoral work. I hear confessions. I'm listening to people's lives. I do baptisms. People are asking me questions. I'll tell you this much, as a priest, 80% of the questions I get are not about who has what appointment from the Vatican.
Archbishop Scicluna.
Scicluna has come up very rarely. More questions about how do I keep my family together? How do I pass on the faith to my children when I barely understand the faith myself, but I know there's something really crucial here? There was a line I frequently say about people that disagree with them, like ecclesiology or something. I say, we agree on the creed, but after that it gets a little dicey. And I had a friend say to me, agreeing on the creed is a lot. There's a lot in there. And I think that's what I take away from Joe in this article, like agreeing on those key concepts that God loved us so much he sent his son into the world to save us. Like, you know, we say that quickly. That's a lot. There's a lot going on there. And you talk about people that don't even know how to express that entirely, but it matters deeply in that article. And I think that's a really important thing. A question I kind of have in light of this, you know, you talk about those two hats. Do you think this, you write this article in the context of the supposed Catholic Civil War. Do you think this is also a little wider critique on professional punditry and the way media has evolved in the social media age?
Wow, that's a good question. I think that, you know, I'm no like social prophet of the political landscape, but it is true that there is a lot of out of touchness, for lack of, you know, about what's happening in the country, and the election of 2016 was such a clear evidence of that. That people that I knew in a certain community were in a certain world were so convinced that Donald Trump was going to get creamed in the election. So utterly convinced. Even one of my rock star heroes, who's supposedly the man of the working class, thought that he was going to get destroyed. And so there is a lot of out of touch, you know, people. But there's also, and a friend of mine, actually a Jesuit friend that Eric and I both know, we also talk about the fact that a lot of the world, like it's so American to think that what we care about is what the rest of the world cares about. Most of the world, so much of the world is people trying to survive, people trying to keep their families together. There's so much poverty and struggle out there. It doesn't say all these issues don't matter, but the reality is that, and even in the U.S., I was talking with a Jesuit pastor who talked about his parish, which is largely Latino, and he said they care about the church sex abuse scandal, for instance. And by the way, this was written right before the scandal, the new one kind of hit. But that's not where they're living. You know, they're living on how to build the church that we love. How do we work and survive in this economy? That's where they're kind of operating out of. And that's in churches all over this country.
And we mentioned we live in like this echo chamber, which gets me wondering, like, what can we do as journalists to speak to the reality of everyday Catholics? If they're not as interested in what kind of we're living, what can we do to help or to service them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I was thinking about this article, I mean, America does that very well, actually. I mean, we get letters or article proposals for the Faith in Focus team, which I work on, about the daily about suicide, about dealing with my father's Alzheimer's diagnosis, about divorce, mm-hmm. about being a chaplain in the military, about being a dealing with opioid addiction. So, you know, we do a great job of giving voice mm-hmm. to those stories in places like that. We also had a young intern or an America Fellow 2 years ago, Wyatt Massey, who wrote a great article. He went out to Kansas and did a piece on a parish in a small town in Kansas. And that's right up his wheelhouse, and, you know, going to where people live and what's actually going on, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, for not just journalists, but I'll just kind of tell myself, when I was a Jesuit, I was studying to be a priest. I became a brother later in my formation. But I had my issues that I thought people needed to hear about. And when I was a priest, I was going to preach on X and Y and Z and call everyone to a task. And that still happens with priests who actually become priests and create these self-selecting parishes and communities and aesthetically how it's going to be. And I'm going to have a piece in the article, which, you know, you create the church that you want it, that you've always dreamed of as a child, that, you know, sweeping fantasia of marble arches and gold leaf and so on, and which can be okay aesthetically, whatever. But, like, is that really what people are looking for? Is that your vision of what the church is and how you think you're mm-hmm. certain it should be? So are you actually listening to people where they are at? Mm-hmm. Or whether you're a journalist or a priest or a lay leader or anyone, are you coming with your vision and forcing it on people? Because those kind of churches can create self-selecting communities.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. it happens all over the place.
Their own echo chamber again. It becomes, right. The church community becomes the echo chamber.
Right.
You only go
right.
to church, you only go to liturgy with the people that agree.
Exactly.
And, mm-hmm. you know, or agree, but see God or have the image of God or the mm-hmm. practice that you have.
Yeah, same vision right. that you have. Yeah.
And that's one of the things that Father Malone is trying to do with the magazine, is a place for a diversity of viewpoints, not just political viewpoints, but also of life experience. And, you know, hearing from people, like you say, in the Faith and Focus section, that is something that distinguishes us from your standard journal of opinion. You know, we are engaged in intellectual questions. That's part of the apostolate of America. But we're also, we care about, you know, the progress of souls. You know, we yeah. publish the Word column, which is a scriptural reflection. And so that's something unique we can offer.
I think it's not surprising that America would do that. It's the Jesuit Review of Faith and Culture. Right. The Ignatian and Jesuit Charism is going to demand that. And I think, Joe, in this article, what is demanded here is not simply a habit or practice or some kind of skill of listening, but there's also a spiritual component to being able to listen to other people and to make yourself open. In the sense of listening to where the Spirit is alive and working, and not just what you will, but to pay attention to the Spirit. And that's not like, you know, just something you learn in a workshop, a professional workshop or administration. That's a spiritual practice and habit that has to be formed.
Exactly. You know, I do it poorly myself, and all Jesuits are just learning bit by bit.
But, oh God, I'm really bad at it too.
Right. But the way I've finally determined how it is, it's are we predetermining where the Spirit of God is? Before we listen to the Spirit of God, are right. we predetermining that it is in my vision of the church, that it's in my aesthetic vision, my vision of how a magazine should be, a sermon should go, a committee, a lay committee on a church, is my vision prioritized over listening to where God actually may be calling us? And that kind of freedom is very difficult to finally attain, and we go up and down in it, but it is about being indifferent and free to where God actually is, rather than where we think God is or should be.
And it's I would say it's a habit that takes a lot, you know.
Right.
People often ask me like an analogy for the spiritual exercise, and I end up very much in like marathon training analogies. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not about like the perfect technique, but this is the day in, day out, put your miles in over and over and over and over. And I think that's the type of practice we're talking about.
Right.
And I think it's something that's extremely important. You know, I'd asked the question to you earlier, Joe, about whether this is an implication of media in general. I don't know that you were doing that, but I would argue that it could be a good implication, and that the practice of freedom and abandoning preconceptions and being really open and indifferent, that is a crucial. I'm trying to avoid the word skill. I'm looking for another word. Mm-hmm. Practice necessary for, I think, survival in the world we're being deluged with all this information.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm as skeptical as anyone about institutions but I really buy Ignatian, the Jesuit thing that I've been taught about discernment. Where is the spirit actually alive? And it's really challenging to kind of break free of the fossilized vision that we or I or anyone will have about how things should be. So yeah, I buy discernment. It doesn't mean everything's up for grabs. It means there are those places, though, there we really have to be called accountable. Is it us or is it the spirit?
Do you think these challenges are particularly difficult in places like New York or Los Angeles, where it's a lot of smart people together, but are passionate about issues, but maybe we're not hooked in as well as you are to the regular Catholic or the regular citizen?
I'm gonna make Joe answer that first.
Of course. I mean, look. I come from Omaha. Omaha, like New York, is about conflict, about being better. About Omaha is like, hey, we're not partisan. We're just trying for the common good. It really is. It's like people take delight in just being sort of even-handed and above partisanship to some degree.
Tourism campaign that hits the
new tourism campaign. Nebraska's not for everyone. Literally, that's what it is. But we're definitely in a very small world here in some ways. Manhattan itself is a very small town in some ways. It's wonderful, and it does amazing. It's created an amazing country to some degrees. But yeah, it can be very small at times.
Right. Well, I value having people like yourselves as part of our work environment, because you not only from these places, but often travel to these places. And we have Jesuits coming through all the time who may just be with us for a couple of years, who are coming. And that's part of why sometimes Jesuits are moved around, is because you're getting different life experiences.
I think that's I don't know if it's always intentional, but it's a great accident of when you move a Jesuit around a lot, you can't get stuck in whatever bubble it is, because you're going to get moved to another place, and all of the, I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. I also love the concept of the Midwest. I don't really know what it exactly is. It's a state of mind more than a geographic location. Mm-hmm. But I was joking with a friend. It took me about a year and a half living in New York to get a little thicker skin. And if I get bumped on the street, I just keep moving. That is a maladaptive skill where I'm from. Because if you bump someone on the street and keep moving, you have offended them and you're probably related to them. So you gotta, someone's going to hear about it. So this the different components of ways of being, it's an interesting setup.
And Vivian, you're from Texas, so
yes.
Definitely different.
Yeah, and same kind of speaking on that. Whenever I go home after living in New York for a few months, my entire family complained that I was a lot meaner. I like to think I'm a pretty pleasant person, but I'm just more direct. But they see that as
me.
You are very rude. It's not appreciated here as it is in Texas.
Sarcasm.
I always argue I think it's more of a function of just the sheer number of people in an amount of space. I don't think there's. When we characterize it as meanness, I don't think that does. I fell down on the subway once. I've never had so many people try to help me. It was unbelievable. So that's, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's mean, but. We're talking here about that experience of difference, and that experience of a different place forces you to think differently about what's going on, and then to analyze sort of that air you were breathing, the water you were swimming in, and realize it's around you, mm-hmm. and it affects you, and understand it differently. And I think
an important point that Joe makes near the end of this piece, and we just got a couple minutes left, that I think is worth lifting up, is that there's a real danger to focusing on this division and discord, that, as you say, Joe, the more you focus on it, the more you suspicious we actually may become of each other. So, this is can be very toxic. So it's not just a working hazard, but it can really affect your relationships.
Yeah, and again, I make the analogy with teaching. I've taught grade school. I'm teaching grade school right now. I've taught high school. Eric's taught high school, and there's those two kids in the class that are taking a lot of your attention. And they're taking attention from the kids that want to learn, that are doing great stuff, that are like excited to be there. But your attention, if you're not aware of it, is going to those two or three kids that are acting up, and it hurts the whole class. And I think that is a good analogy for, you know, for this stuff. I mean, Father Martin was protested by 200 people in Chicago for a talk he gave about Jesus. It had nothing to do with his book about building a bridge. But there's like 5 million people in Chicago. That's 200, you know? Or maybe it was 100, who knows? But so...
I mean, the line you've got in the article, the more you feed the wolf, the bigger the wolf gets. I think that reads to your point.
Yeah.
But if we feed the wolf, we'll get better numbers on Google. So.
This is true.
But then the wolf will eat us and or Google. It's going to make you ask a lot of difficult questions.
Well, and you do need people to engage with the people in the echo chamber, so to speak.
Right.
Share. It's like America's thing. What is the church speaking to the world, and what is the world speaking to the church? So this is...
You can't ignore it entirely.
No, you've got to speak to each other in the media world and the movers and shakers in the professional media and church world, but, you know, you've got to stay grounded.
Well, absolutely. Well, again, the article is, No, There Is Not a Civil War in the Catholic Church, brought to us by Brother Joe Hoover, who I should mention is our poetry editor as well. So check out our poetry at americamagazine.org. He's also a playwright and an actor, and you live in Brooklyn. So people should also look out for your creative works out there.
Thank you.
I want to thank my colleagues here, Father Eric Sundrup and Vivian Cabrera, for joining us. It's always good to have you here. And to remind folks that you can read all of these articles on our website at americamagazine.org. And somewhere here I have the subscription number. Let's see if I can find it here. Here it is. Okay, thank you very much. So you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/AmericaMag or on Twitter, speaking of the Echo Chamber, at Twitter. Is that at AmericaMag, correct?
At AmericaMag, correct.
Is our Twitter handle. And to subscribe to America, you can please call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533. For Tim Reedy, Vivian Cabrera, and Father Eric Sundrup, we want to thank you so much for joining us. And to remind you that Brother Joe Hoover, you can find his pieces online. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.